Okay. So continuing on the theme of easy issues to do with IFRS 9. Moving on to agenda paper 7. So before I ask the staff to present agenda paper 7, for people listening to the meeting, I just wanted to explain what we're going to be asking the committee today, because it's slightly different to what we usually do. And so what we're going to ask the committee today, because this is an issue which relates to a new standard, which is not in effect yet, so we don't have evidence of application and practice to draw upon, and because this issue is solely related to IFRS 9 rather than touching upon IAS 39 like the previous issue did, we are going to ask the committee not so much what they want us to do about this issue per se, or rather we're going to ask the committee specifically their views on the clarity of the words in IFRS 9. The second thing we'll then ask, and I will ask that we discuss that first, so what do you think the words 9 say? The second thing I'll ask the committee will be, is there anything else that you think the board should be aware of, or things that we should think about? And the objective of this meeting is really to gather additional feedback that we will then feed to the board in a paper which analyses the same issue, along with the feedback we've got from the committee, and the staff will ask the board what, if anything, they want to do about this question. So it's slightly different to our usual process, so we're using the committee really primarily as a fact-gathering exercise for a board discussion. With that lengthy introduction, I hand over to the staff.
Thank you. Agenda paper 7. The Interpretations Committee received a query about whether particular prepayable financial assets meet the solely payments of principal and interest or SPPI condition in IFRS 9. Specifically, the submission described two prepayable debt instruments, and in both cases, the prepayment option was held only by the borrower. The first instrument allowed the borrower to prepay at an amount that reflects the instrument's remaining contractual cash flows discounted at a current market interest rate, and this was called a symmetric make-whole prepayment option. The second instrument allowed the borrower to prepay at the instrument's current fair value. IFRS 9 addresses contractual terms that permit prepayments, and the relevant paragraph is reproduced in paragraph 4 of the agenda paper. But in summary, that paragraph states that a prepayment option results in contractual cash flows that meet the SPPI condition if the prepayment amount substantially represents unpaid amounts of principal and interest, which may include reasonable additional compensation for the early termination of the contract. Our analysis, which is set out in paragraphs 13 to 22 of the paper, focuses on whether the compensation under the contractual prepayment options described in the submission is consistent with the requirements in IFRS 9. In our view, the requirements in IFRS 9 address the fact that in many cases, the party who exercises an option to terminate a contract before maturity may be required to compensate the other party for having to accept that choice. In the submission, only the borrower can choose to terminate the contract early and can do so for any reason. In these circumstances, we think the requirements in IFRS 9 accommodate only a situation in which the borrower compensates the lender. However, the prepayment options described in the submission could have the result that the lender is forced to accept an amount which in effect represents a payment to the borrower instead of being compensated by the borrower. In our view, this outcome is inconsistent with the requirements set out in IFRS 9. Consequently, we think the contractual cash flows of the instruments described in the submission do not meet the SPPI condition. In this session, on the grounds that IFRS 9 is a recently issued standard that is not yet effective, we would like to ask the committee for feedback on the clarity of the relevant requirements in IFRS 9 and advice on how to proceed with addressing this query, including any particular factors that the board should consider. With this, I hand over to the committee for discussion.
Okay, and as I said in my tee up, thanks Marcus, I'd like to first of all get committee members to talk about how read the words in the standard and whether they think they're clear or not. And then as a second sweep, we'll come back round and ask whether there's anything else you think we should be aware of, take into consideration when the board discusses this issue. So broader context. Okay, Reinhardt?
Just a couple of points. I agree with what the staff analysis, but in terms of clarity of the words, I think it would be helpful for the staff to focus on the fact that the wording in B4111 and B4112 is a little bit different, because in B4111, where it talks about solely payments of principal and interest, it talks about substantially representing unpaid amounts of principal and interest on the principal amount outstanding, which may include additional reasonable compensation. But yet then in terms of B4112, where it talks about prepayment options, in B it says it represents the contractual par amount and accrued but unpaid contractual interest. So the words are somewhat different, which may be causing some of the confusion in practice. I think the other thing second thing I would note is that when we had our discussion about negative interest rates, the conclusion was that negative interest rates do not cause concern from the perspective of SPPI, but one could see how a negative interest rate would result in the principal amount not being recovered. And so I think that blurs the issue somewhat again in terms of the interpretation and practice. And then the third thing I would point out is that my understanding is that there are some jurisdictions where either regulators are requiring or contractual agreements are such that require symmetrical treatment of lender and borrower. And so I understand there are certain jurisdictions where the regulators have said when a financial institution lends to a certain type of entity, there has to be fairness to both sides. And so I think this issue, from what I understand, arises in the UK and perhaps in some other parts of the world, and it would seem an unfortunate consequence if those lenders in those circumstances would have to show those loans at fair value through P&L. Again, I just point that out in terms of an additional thing to be aware of.
On the negative interest, the way that I think about the words off the cuff, looking at the staff with a degree of nervousness, is that we think about it as being principal plus interest plus additional compensation, which can have particular characteristics. So if it was negative interest, I'd think that as long as that's principal plus interest, which could be negative, that's that first number, and then the extra amount needs to be the additional reasonable compensation or whatever the words are. So that's how I would think about it, but maybe I've spent too long thinking about it, and that's not a fair standard to talk people to, but that would be the distinction I'd make just on that specific point. Bruce?
Thanks, Sue. I'll start by saying I don't have a huge amount of experience with these specific instruments, but when I read through the paper, I kind of thought the answer was obvious, to be very honest. I read through it, and from what I could see, and it was pretty much exactly that. The fact is that I thought that when you look at paragraph 24 and what that said, the prepayment option described in the submission could have resulted in lenders forced to accept prepayments out substantially less than the unpaid amounts of the principal and interest. To me, once you're in a situation where you've got that volatility that's not linked to the P&I, you're outside. That's kind of always been my interpretation. So I guess what the question I was asking is, am I missing a bigger technical issue in this?
Don't think so.
Okay. I was just worried that when I read it, I kind of got to a simple answer. So with anything in life, that's always my default. If I understand it, there's a problem.
That's how I start as well.
Yeah. John?
Yeah, similar to Reinhardt. I think when I read the staff's analysis, I think that that's how I would interpret additional compensation as well, that it's actually compensation that has to be paid by the holder of the option upon exercise to the other party, rather than compensation that the party who's subject to the exercise might have to pay. And it seems to me that is consistent with the notion of holding a financial asset at amortized cost. If you've got the counterparty who can elect to sort of exit and settle the asset, and you have to pay them, it seems to me that you're, you know, to stand back and look at the principal, why should that be amortized cost accounted? I do though think that there are, as Reinhardt pointed out, there are markets where there's a requirement to have these, and because this is actually looking at whether you qualify for SPPI and qualify for amortized cost, I think there are instruments here which most people would say, it, you know, the better information is provided by them being accounted for at amortized cost, but they actually have a requirement in the market through regulation or whatever to have these symmetrical compensation clauses. And it seems to be, you know, for them to fail SPPI and require all of those instruments to be measured at fair value doesn't necessarily is, I mean, it seems to run counter, certainly runs counter to the business model. I have less sympathy in a situation where the prepayment option is one that the, and some of these are ones that are contingent upon certain triggers, so they're contingent, they're, you know, there's a contingency. It's not a free option for the holder to, or for the borrower to exercise at any time and get the financial benefit of the option. So they're really not held, the options are really not capable of being financially benefited by the borrower unless something else happens, you know, i.e. they dispose of their property or something. So I have more sympathy for those still being consistent with an amortized cost SPPI than I do for a, what I would call a financial prepayment option where somebody can just cash out the asset at any point in time, or cash out, you know, settle their liability at any point in time. I do think the words are not, I mean, there is diversity of view on the meaning of the words, so I think they could be clarified. I mean, some have certainly taken the view that reasonable additional compensation does not prevent the compensation going, you know, to the exerciser of the option rather than the other way. That's not how I would read the standard, but I think there is diversity, so I think the wording could be clarified.
Okay, Tony.
Very similar thoughts. I'm not sure that that some of the arrangements that I've seen in practice or the arrangement in here is necessarily inconsistent with the notion of solely payments of principal and interest. I think when I get onto the words, I'm not sure the words are clear. So when you described it, you said principal plus interest plus compensation. It says principal interest on the principal amount outstanding, which may include additional compensation. So it's does that word additional mean it's a plus, or does that word mean it's something else that is part of the settlement? And therefore, my sense is that it could go the other way. I don't think the words are sufficiently clear, but I think I would echo a lot of what John said, that we've seen these instruments in jurisdictions in which the law requires the inclusion of these clauses. They may be contingent, those contingencies may not be triggered very often, and those instruments seem to me to be entirely consistent with the notion of being solely payments of principal and interest. And so I don't think that the words are sufficiently clear to say that the way the staff have read it is the only way of reading it.
Although on your point about you consider them to be consistent with solely payments of principal and interest, not as the board's defined it. Mm. It's not like what people think the right answer should be. Yeah. Because the board has been, because amortized cost mechanics are quite simple, we've been quite strict in terms of trying to make sure that the instruments that get in there have got pretty vanilla cash flows.
Yep.
And the more we start having amounts which are disconnected just with simple principal and interest, the worse those mechanics work.
Agreed.
And I guess one of my concerns when people say, you know, it's sort of fair to have these accounted for as solely payments of principal and interest, I would be more comfortable with that if I was confident that that means that people are going to do more renewed, updated estimates of what they think the cash flows are going to be, including these sort of prepayment options. But my concern would be people are going to do cash accounting, to be blunt, and just ignore those options until they suddenly come out of the blue.
I guess having defined solely payments of principal and interest, and then included a paragraph that says contractual term that permits either party to settle it early, and introduce the notion of reasonable additional compensation. Mm-hmm. Then that's saying, well, it can't. The settlement isn't purely principal plus the interest on that principal that is outstanding.
Yep.
Part of the notion of solely payments, principal and interest, is that compensation. And I guess my sense is, at the moment, I don't think that's sufficiently clear to say it can only go one way.
Which is a different question. That's a different question. But in terms of have we let extra things in? Yes, we have. And the extra things we let in were sort of borrowed from IAS 39, where some extra things have been let in. So we sort of allowed those still, but yeah. Young Sue?
Yeah. To me, the wording is clear. Before, just with the staff paper, I just thought about why there is a kind of phrase like that. And I think the purpose of the phrase is to maintain the payment of principal and interest, which means that the prepayment option should have a zero value or does not affect the future cash flow. So if you just think about what's the purpose of the phrase, then I think this wording is very clear to the people.
Thank you. Richard?
I would concur with Tony's views on this one. When you have a make-whole clause in a bond debt, generally the indemnity you're paying is not an indemnity. It's just the prepayment of the future interests. It's just because the investor wants what it has contracted for. So effectively, there might be a slight premium, a reasonable additional compensation, but most of the payments is just the prepayments of the future interest that you would have paid if you had stayed within the bonds. And when there is no make-whole clause, which happened many times, then, and if it's a bond, then you have an assembly and there is a threshold, and if effectively you have the majority, which is generally two-thirds, you can prepay, you can reimburse the bond debt, then you will be in a position to do it. And it's exactly the same way. You will just pay the future interest. I mean, the indemnity you will pay is just the future interest you will pay in advance. That's all. And sometimes people refuse because they just want to regularly receive their cash flows as they initially contracted for. So I think the wording is quite clear when you're in that direction, as Tony mentioned, and probably effectively my only concern would be then the other way around, in an environment where you can have situations in the other way around when the additional compensation is a negative one. I don't know, maybe it can happen. So that would be my only concern. But I thought effectively that those forms of clause meet the definition of an interest in nature. It has really the nature of an interest. Just you prepay in advance. That's the only thing.
Some very similar thoughts to others in this. When I read 4.11, and we bring in this concept of payment of principal plus interest plus additional compensation, when you followed the work of this group and understood that in the past this we indicated that interest could be negative, you then asked the question, well, why can't additional compensation be negative? However, when you then link it to, well, if you could be paid substantially less than the present value of principal and interest, then you understand that additional compensation is different, and that's why it can't be negative. Now, in exploring the submission, there are a lot of other fact patterns out there than just the generic one, where you start to think about, well, these don't seem to be so bad, you know, they follow the business model, why couldn't they be at amortized cost? And I've kind of struggled with, well, where would you draw the line, and can you really draw the line to differentiate these from others?
Okay, Andrew.
I've got some quite similar thoughts, so I'll be reasonably brief. I think it's fairly clear what's in the standard, although I do understand how there can be the argument of can compensation positive or negative. It is a very jurisdictional issue, so in some jurisdictions it's very, very significant, in many others it doesn't matter. In terms of what the board, I think, would need to decide, it's a question of whether the board opens the door a little or not. Because whatever is done, it seems that there are divergent views around what additional compensation means. So that's one question to look at. And then if there's a view that there's a little bit of wiggle room on this, then it seems that on the point that was previously made about amortized cost measurement, that there would also need to be clarification that if you think your cash flows are going to go down because someone's going to prepay at fair value that's less than the principal amount, you've got to do the appropriate adjustment. The effect of that would seem to be that other than for changes in interest rates, your present value that's the tail on the balance sheet isn't going to be all that much different. So it may be a way of dealing with the issue, but it seems one where it's very difficult to let it sit.
Thank you. Jim?
Just about 10 minutes ago, I thought the wordings are clear. But after listening to this conversation, I got confused.
So we're really helping with interpretation.
Yes, yes, definitely. Just tell me, this one, as described by the staff, if we just simply read through the wording of the existing IFRS 9 and we interpret it as these wordings like normal people do, and all of a sudden we thought, okay, negative interest, that's fine. We put a negative number that will mathematically mean a reduction of the principal. But all of a sudden, negative compensation. For the lack of better wording, should we write the word punishment on that? All of a sudden, these the basic concepts of the wording get blurred. So even though I tend to say that I agree with the view one solution, means that as many of us mentioned, we should treat them regularly other than just separately. I tend to say that we lead toward that direction, not to make these wording so very unique. And back to your initial question, the wording is clear, even though I tend not to agree with the meaning of it. So it's my
Carl.
I think the question is what could be reasonable additional compensation other than Bertrand said the future coupons paid at the cancellation moment or the fair value. I don't know. Do you have examples of things other than this? I don't know.
You mean examples, Carl, of other types of options like this?
No, other examples of additional compensation.
Of unreasonable additional compensation.
Other than future coupons and...
In terms of the paper, we've tried not to get into what's reasonable additional compensation. It's more, at its heart, I think what the paper's really saying is it clear, because we've used the words compensation, that needs to be an additional positive amount as opposed to a negative amount. If we wanted to start talking about what's reasonable additional compensation, I think we'd need another paper. So I'd prefer we don't answer that on the fly because it might...
So we have a valid issue.
Yeah. It might, you know, we might say something without full analysis that has terrible consequences for somebody. But yeah, it's a good question. It's another big question, but I think here we're trying to focus on the does direction matter. Bonnie?
I think what I have struggled with a bit in kind of reviewing this is, I guess the way I understand the symmetric make-whole provision is that it essentially puts the lender in the position of the repayment based on the current market rate rather than the rate in the original instrument. Mm-hmm. So I guess if it's clearly understood that the repayment, if I look at paragraph 4, which has the reprint of B4.1.11, it's the unpaid amounts of principal and interest on the principal amount outstanding. That should, I would assume, mean the original rate at which the instrument was issued, which may or may not have been the market rate at the time, right? You could have a premium or a discount, plus additional compensation for that. Then I think it's clear if somebody could read, okay, well, I'm making them whole of the principal and interest, even if it's at the market rate at the time, then I think that's where I was struggling a bit as to whether or not I clearly understood the standard. And I don't have very much experience with these types of instruments, so I'm not sure what the normal kind of practice is. But I think that's the point that I was struggling with a bit, because it's either the rate at which the instrument was originally issued at, or it's the market rate. But it's the principal and the interest. It's at which rate are you really looking at it at? Maybe that helps clarify the specific point to ensure the standard gets across. But that's where I had a bit of a struggle.
Thank you. Bruce.
Thanks. I was just coming back to some of the comments made earlier. I mean, I'm still battling with the concept that this could be negative. And the reason I say that is if I look at it in terms of the instruments we've done here, I mean, if I buy one of these instruments, firstly, I'm assuming it's going to affect my pricing, the fact that I've given you the option within that. The second thing is, I mean, probably the wrong word to use, I can see we're getting all technical, but if you think about it, these instruments have got almost an embedded derivative within them. They're linked to something other than the principal and interest. So I'm saying in that basis, I see that when I look at 4.1.11, that's telling me that straight away. The second thing was that when you talk about when you look at the actual wording, it says represents unpaid amounts of principal and interest, okay, on the principal amount outstanding. That's the first statement, which means you've got to say, what is my principal and interest outstanding at this point? And then it says, comma, now I'm being pedantic, but that's the thing, it says, which may include reasonable additional compensation. Now, when I look at the concept of compensation by definition, I mean, unfortunately, the glossary only talks about it from an IS 19 point of view, but compensation, in essence, is something received to beneficial to somebody. Yeah. And I'm saying that if you strictly read that word, and even if I analogize it to what's in the glossary, that's a positive compensation somebody has received. I mean, I don't necessarily think we need to go there, but I'm just saying it's, I just battle how we would get to a negative answer and say that's still going to meet the P&R.
Well, I certainly got out a dictionary when I was looking at
this. Yeah.
Mikhail, did you want to add something?
No, I have no comments to this one.
Okay. Now, Martin.
Yeah. Well, B4.1.11 is the key. And It is the interpretation of what is additional compensation, as said. I mean, personally, I would be in favor to have such an instrument based on SPPI tests. So if you have such an option in, that it could be still accounted for in a way. But I guess we need to add something, at least in an agenda decision, what is meant by that. And if we all agree that additional compensation is always positive in a negative interest environment, that's for me the key question.
But I guess we're not really thinking about agenda decisions here, right? Because this is, we're going to gather information and go back to the board. So I think what you're telling me, Martin, if I understand correctly, is you think it would be reasonable to allow something broader than what compensation might suggest in the negative interest rate environment.
The question is why these options are used, and sometimes there might be a regulatory reason beyond why an issuer has to include such an option. And overall, then the question is whether we should not allow to see such an instrument as fulfilling the SPPI test.
Now, thank you. So I think that's our feedback on clarity. Also, some of you have given some views on the broader question of what you think the board should be aware of, because I think a number of you have told us that you think it would be perhaps appropriate to think about the role of regulation and whether we should make some distinction based on whether somebody's sort of done this freely or whether they've had to do it, to paraphrase. Does anybody else have any broader comments that they would like the staff to take back to the board?
I think what the board will have to consider is both the clarity of the wording and whether there needs to be improvement to the clarity of the wording, but I would also encourage them to consider whether there are some types of these instruments that don't or shouldn't have an effect on the conclusion on SPPI, because I do think that there are. And I agree that you're drawing a line then, and where do you draw it? And I mean, you're going to open up a whole raft of questions about how to define that. But there are certainly fact patterns with these options where you would say that everything around it, the contingencies involved in them being able to be exercised, the regulation that underpins them, actually doesn't, to me, makes them very much linked to the whole notion of sort of being consistent with SPPI. And that's not to say that I think the additional means two-way. I don't really read it that way.
Yep.
And to have a symmetric make-whole option and open it up and say they're all okay, that seems to me that would be inconsistent with SPPI. But I do think in looking at an amendment, you will have to consider a number of different fact patterns and see whether they fall on the wrong side of the line.
All right, thanks. Bob?
I would just encourage the board to think about not just the submission that was asked, but the full model, because we've been focusing mostly on the borrower's triggered option. We've mentioned regulatory. There are outside events that can trigger prepayment and force the lender to accept something less, but there's also lender prepayment options where the lender can trigger put the instrument, and in certain cases they might and accept something less. So there's a whole all these scenarios I think need to be considered.
Not making me feel any more warm and fuzzy. I hear you.
I hear you, Bob. Doesn't make me feel good, but I do hear you.
Tony.
But if we can't give a broader model.
Yeah. It's a fair observation. I'm joking.
The risk of making you feel even less warm and fuzzy. I have a very similar view. I think this is a broader issue than just the specific issue in this fact pattern. And I think that you're going to consider what the notion of reasonable additional compensation is, then I think the board does need to think about what they meant by the notion of reasonable additional compensation, and when do you get beyond simply payments of principal and unpaid interest on that principal. And I think as part of doing that, it's considering, okay, what do we think that principal is? And then, like John and Bob, I think there are instruments that seem to me consistent with the notion of SPPI. And while I can understand if you say, well, wouldn't want to include all prepayment options, because that I can see how that is inconsistent with the notion of SPPI, but I think there are some prepayment options that are consistent with the notion. And so I think it is important that the board considers the other types of fact patterns as part of considering whether or not it needs to do anything.
Bertrand?
No, I totally agree with what Tony's just said. Effectively, there are cases whereby your clause is rather mechanic, and as I've already said, you just prepare your future interests. And then economically, it has the nature, the substance of an interest. financial interest.
John?
So just one other issue. I mean, we haven't focused on the second question that was asked in the submission, which is about the fair value prepayment options. And I know the paper sort of addresses it as a similar issue to the first question, but there is actually an additional nuance to that question, because the question is asked in the submission whether a floored fair value prepayment option is okay, and it's so in other words a non-symmetric, because there is some difference views out there as to whether any fair value prepayment option, even one that has a floor, in other words the compensation is only going one direction, is okay. And I know the paper doesn't address that. I don't know if it's the intention for the board to also discuss more broadly those fair value prepayment options.
Okay, that's all useful. We'll take that back to the board. I think, though, just a couple of things to flag. I think that given it's not long since we published IFRS 9 and people are in the middle of implementation, we need to be a little bit careful about thinking that we're throwing the notion of solid payments of principal and interest up in the air, which I take the point that it's not just this particular fact pattern, but I think if we were to do something, we need to be very careful about how much has opened up, particularly now. I take the point on reasonable additional compensation. We can have a look at that, but I think some people probably quite like the fact it's a bit ish at the moment and might not thank us if we go wading in too much there, but have a look at that. Also, just in terms of expectations management, and I'm not saying no, but I'm just flagging for people. The board in a couple of circumstances already in IFRS 9 have looked at the role of regulation. We looked at the role of regulation when we looked at how much selling was going on in business model and decided that just because a regulator told you to sell wasn't different to a free choice to sell. We also looked at the role of regulation when we looked at whether or not if there were circumstances in which you may have to give somebody equity instead of settle in cash, because the regulator stepped in, that should change the classification, and the board said no, because we wanted to focus on economics. We also looked at situations where people questioned whether it was appropriate to look at the likelihood of particular options being exercised, and the board said no to that as well. So we were quite sort of black and white in trying to come up with what solely payments of principal and interest is. And I know that for some people this is a big deal, so please don't take this as a no. But in terms of expectations management, I think we need to be careful how much of the foundations of IFRS 9 start to be pulled out once we start reconsidering some of these things. And I think that's the challenge for the staff, in terms of we absolutely need to reflect what the committee has told us when we go back to the board, but we also need to think about whether, if we were to do something to try and address this issue, it could be done in a way that wasn't ridiculously narrow in terms of this fact pattern, but not so broad that we start to unpick the whole foundation of IFRS 9, which I think is quite elegant. And so with that challenge, I'll leave that with the staff to deal with. Benefits of being on the board. But that was interesting and helpful, and thank you for being constructive, because I'm sure that lots of people would love to just say, it's not fair, and you didn't, so thank you for that. So I'm looking at the staff. We're ahead of schedule still, so do you think we should break now, or do you want to try and squeeze another paper in before lunch? Maybe I should ask the committee to vote. Do you want to keep going, or do you want to have lunch? Lunch is ready?
Keep going.
Who wants to keep going? Okay, they're key.
we want to answer IFRS 9 subjects.
We might as well get 9 done and then we can relax.
We want the next one. We'll eventually get it delayed.
So, and we've got the staff here, so that's good. So now we're moving on.